Seriously Sinister discusses true petty crimes that may be disturbing to some.
Or it could be easy listening to all of you psychopaths out there.
Names and places have been changed to protect the hosts legally.
Listener discretion is not advised.
Welcome to Seriously Sinister, the show where the crimes are real, but the details don't matter. This is Trevin.
Oh my God, we need that on a shirt or something. And I am Amanda. How's it going, Trevin? Got anything dreadful for me this week?
You know, I've got a dreadful sort of thing. It's something I've noticed. I wouldn't say that, I don't know, it's kind of a dilemma.
Okay.
It's one of my more abstract ones.
Uh-huh.
I have recently discovered that I am murder-proof.
Okay, explain yourself.
Now, I know you would say being murder-proof is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But let me explain this.
All right.
So if I could set the stage for you for a second. Imagine the dark, dark evening. I'm in a house all by myself. I decide that I need to take a shower. I take a shower. And I step out of the shower. My glistening white body steps onto the cold floor. In this situation, in this hypothetical bathroom, the shower is very close to the front door. Outside of the bathroom door, shrouded in darkness. I can't see a thing because for some reason, when I'm in the house by myself, I like a dark house. Not knowing there's a serial killer in the dark, getting ready to do something. As I bend down to dry my hair and try to get my back, even though I never seem to get certain spots when I put my shirt on, my back is turned to this dark area. The serial killer raises his weapon to take me out. And then he hears, "Thank you for being a friend. Traveled down a road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant." Now, how is that serial killer supposed to do his job when I am embarrassingly singing Golden Girls?
I mean, I just don't see a way he could.
Exactly. Now, I think that I'm just a little too embarrassing when I'm by myself for someone to murder me.
I see.
I would like to know how many times a serial killer has like a bloopers moment. You know, nobody's going to have a documentary and be all chummy with them and be like, "Hey, tell me a time where it didn't work out."
Right.
But like, do you think there's ever been a time where somebody, you know, just had like something really goofy or something weird happen and then they're just like, "I just couldn't do it"?
Oh, I guarantee
there
have to be weird situations where maybe the person they were trying to go after is wearing a shirt that they liked or that reminded them of something, or maybe they farted. Maybe the person farted really loudly and they were just like, "Okay, like I'm out." Right?
Right. And I will tell you about a time that's actually a real time. I mean, not that I don't sing Golden Girls out of the shower. So I worked a call center job for a short amount of time. When you first start there, you have to work overnights as like sort of just everybody pays their dues and does that. I worked with this kind of shitty dude. He didn't stay very long, but he was kind of a nightmare to work with. But we had to work overnight. The overnight shift was a very small shift. There was only two of us. But eventually it was to train me to be by myself. So it was my lunchtime. Of course, when it's your lunchtime, one guy mans the phones. And then you go and have your lunch, and eventually you come back and man the phones for him to have lunch. I was working a night, and we at the upstairs call center area share an upstairs area with another department. It was a more privileged department that had a little bit more going for him than we did. So the night before, I had went in there, and the other department had had a birthday in the department, and there was this chocolate cake.
Oh, God.
Ooh, baby, was it chocolate. And I knew it wasn't for the low trash level person like me, but that didn't stop me from stealing a sliver of that cake, putting it on my plate, and eating it after my lunch.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I had that. The next day, I had another overnight shift. This time I was training with this guy and I go for my lunch. He's like, okay, I'll watch the phones. You go have your lunch. I walked across the building, went into the lunchroom, went to go get my lunch, opened up the refrigerator, and there was the cake still. They hadn't eaten it all yet, and they still left it in the office. And so I put my hands on my hips. I looked at that cake and said, there you are, you magnificent bastard. And I heard a noise.
Oh my God.
And that fucker had followed me to the kitchen and was going to go boo and scare me. And he was like, are you talking to a cake?
Oh my God. Oh my.
And I was like, no, I that's something else. You want any of this cake? And he's like, it's not for us. And I said, okay. But when he walked away, I still ate some of the cake.
You're right. There's just no way.
I am murder proof.
You're murder proof. Oh, Draven. Oh, that was beautiful. Okay. Well, I also have a dreadful dilemma.
Okay.
Mosquitoes. You know, I hate them. Mm. I've talked about this, I believe, on the show before. Honestly, I'm not a fan of summertime because specifically of the mosquitoes in Missouri. But I have a specific mosquito that has, quite frankly, been ruining my life for the past week.
Mm.
Jordan and I have nicknamed him Ninjskito because he's a straight-up ninja mosquito. Just combine the words. We're very creative. Ninjskito. Mm. And we have seen it. And this bad boy is like a big mosquito.
Uh-huh.
One of the biggest I've ever seen. But for some reason, and him and I have tried. We have tried for days to get this thing because it's bitten up Lila's legs, like up and down, my arm. Her and I are both very allergic to mosquito bites, so they get like really puffed up.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been on the hunt for Ninjskito for a week. We've seen him. We've all seen him, like, now and then. We've all been on high alert, and we've seen him. But I swear he's a ninja because we'll be following him. I'm about to hit it, and out of nowhere, he just vanishes.
Ooh.
Yeah, so my dreadful dilemma this week is Ninjskito terrorizing my home.
Well, I hope you stop him eventually.
I know.
Or he just moves on to a different family to terrorize.
Yeah, it's really awful. It's just this one fat ass mosquito.
But you can't really blame him because you just have such a sweet family.
Oh my God. Apparently so. So are you ready for some trivia?
Yes, trivia.
You awkward
ass. I'm not going to do any sort of a transition, which this is now a bad one.
There you go. Whoa, 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 Trevin, we do not have the rights to say that.
Let's have a fun time.
Okay, Trevin, you are a right-handed human being, correct?
Right.
Okay. So, according to The Mirror, which I believe they are a media of some sort, newspaper, online article, whatever.
Now, are you saying that if you're doing this in The Mirror, I have a left hand?
No. The Mirror is the name of the place who somehow, which I will get to, but I have no idea how they gathered these statistics at all. But here we go. According to The Mirror, approximately how many left-handed people die each year using equipment made for right-handers? Do you think, Trevin, that it is A, 1,000, B, 6,700, or C, 2,500?
I'm just going to go with a clear 1,000.
Okay, well, you are wrong, my friend.
Oh.
It is C, 2,500.
2,500. Now, I wonder how... Well, I understand what you're saying with the statistics on that.
Yeah, like, how in God's green earth did they figure this statistic out?
It makes me wonder if they did some real deep searching on interesting facts, and they're like, hey, did you know the light switch was supposed to be for right-handed people? Or something like that? Or, like, you know what I mean? Is it something that... Do we know that's really just made for right-handed people? Because there's not that many things in the world that I know is only made for a right or left hand, like a guitar or a glove. Like, what are you killing
yourself
with gloves?
Like, there's not like a blender that's like, oh God, once a lefty gets a hold of it, their hand's going to get cut off and they're going to bleed out. I'm like, how are these lefties dying? What machinery are we talking about here?
Yeah, I want to know all lefty specific machine things.
Yeah, I know.
Because I feel like if this was a thing, you would have companies trying to upcharge a left-handed version and just trying to sell them. Like, oh, you don't want to get the right-handed coffee maker. Yeah. You need the left-handed Keurig.
Oh, these damn lefties better watch it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, who knows? Who knows what's going on? But they're dying, and they're dying quick, Trevin, and they got to stop using these right-handed main machinery.
Yeah, those poor bastards. They just don't know what they're doing. Like, they're going to... They're like those turkeys that look up in the rain and drown. Like, they're just... They can't help themselves. I am so sorry to all the lefties out there.
I know. I actually really love lefties. I really do.
Yeah, my realtor is a lefty. And
my best friend's a lefty.
Luke's a lefty. Yeah.
Is he? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Okay, so my question is about carbon emissions.
Okay.
That's fun.
Love it.
Statistics state that the carbon emissions from a cremation is equal to what? A, driving 5 miles in a mid-sized sedan. B, cooking a hamburger. Or C, eating a small studio apartment for a night.
For some reason, my first instinct is to go with A, number A.
Number A.
Oh my God! Cut that immediately. Letter A.
Strike it from the record. And you're incorrect as well.
Oh, damn.
The carbon emissions from a cremation is equal to cooking a hamburger.
What?
Yeah, so isn't that nice? Nice and convenient.
Ooh, I just really don't like that comparison.
Yeah, comparing cooking food to cooking a person. I get that.
Weird. Okay. I just... One hamburger, though? Like, that's not a lot.
No, it's really not. And I think that's kind of part of it is, like, this is probably better for the environment. Well, actually, no. I mean, putting yourself in the ground really is, because then you can feed the trees. But
I guess. I'm not doing it.
No, I'm going to be frozen, obviously.
I know. You're going to be frozen, and I'll be cremated. So I'll be, like, you know.
You'll be a hamburger.
A hamburger, even though I do not eat them.
Wow. Who gets the last laugh, you vegetarian?
Not me. I'm dead. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I didn't see that one being the answer, obviously. I did not choose it. Mm-hmm. So that's really weird. But
yeah. I mean, if you think about it, though, if every time you cremated a person, it was the same as keeping an apartment warm for a night or driving in a car, they probably would be like, maybe you don't do it as
much. Yeah. That makes sense then. Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. So, are we at story time now, Trevin?
It is time to drop some truth and drop some stories.
All right. Well, I actually have a surprise for you that goes with my story this week.
Oh, I hate surprises.
So, let me go and grab it real quickly.
Uh-oh. I can't wait. Okay, I'm being told to record myself. Ooh, blueberry muffin wine.
Isn't this your favorite company?
Yeah, I love Wendy wine.
Okay, good. Get over back over here.
All right. I have just been given some Windy Wine Company from a local place around here. They are my favorite winery. They make a peanut butter and jelly wine that is
that
my
one.
Absolute favorite.
Damn! I debated between this flavor and the peanut butter and jelly. What is this one exactly? Is it blueberry...
Muffin.
Blueberry muffin blueberry flavored muffin. Wine. I mean, does it get any cuter than that? I really don't think so.
They are... Oh, they're so great. I love this place.
Aren't they not that far from Kansas City?
No, not that far. They're just outside of St. Joe a little bit.
Okay.
It's actually... They're very close to... Chateau Farm, where you had your birthday that one time.
Oh, okay.
That's the winery I went to after...
After that party.
After that party.
Oh, okay. Well, I have never tried their wine before. This will be my first time, but I knew that this was your favorite winery, and it ties in very beautifully with my story this week.
Oh, hot damn.
So I figured that we could enjoy some blueberry wine.
Well, it is open.
Yay!
Pinkies out and bottoms up.
Damn, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn, that is good.
This is going to make the stories even better.
Oh, I just can't even. So, yes, so shout out to Windy Wine Company.
Oh, yeah, they're getting a tag.
Ooh. That is damn good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to get their stuff more often.
Yeah, they've got a lot of different and interesting flavors. They did it was like a mint one for St. Patty's Day. And they had, oh my gosh, they're all over the place. They have a strawberry vanilla one or something.
What? And,
one that's really good is blackberry cobbler is really good.
Oh, I did see that one too. I was so torn. Mm-hmm. But I love blueberry and I didn't know what to do.
Their pear one's good. Yeah, they're all over the place. They got good stuff.
So we've got our wine. So I feel like we are prepared for my story this week. This story was actually one, Trevin, that I was going to tell in the past.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really know if it fit our show or I didn't know if it was petty enough as far as the actual crime itself or if it was a little too hardcore. But the more I went back and forth and back and forth on it, I actually think it's perfect for our show. And I'm not going to ruin it anymore. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you.
All right. All cheers to that.
Okay. Here we go. Merlot, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay. Breathe in the aroma of citrus, notes of vanilla, and spice. Twirl the delectable liquid gently in your moisturized hand as you deeply inhale the aromas all over again. Taste the history with each sip and experience a new culture with each polite gulp. This is the world of a prestigious wine connoisseur. So pour yourself a bottle of Barefoot wine from your local gas station and listen up. The late 90s were an interesting time in America. As the stock markets began to crash, expensive wines began to soar. The majority of people who attend these uppity wine collector auctions were white middle-aged men. So when Rudy Kerniawan quickly stepped into the scene, he was noticed. He was a baby-faced young Asian man with collared shirts, dark-rimmed glasses, and a thick glob of gel slicking back his hair. Rudy had come out of nowhere and had instantly become a big player in the wine scene. Rumors about how this young man had so much money began to circulate. He had spent countless amounts on antique wines, some being worth $20,000 a bottle. Some of the wine collectors heard that Rudy's parents owned Heineken, but no one was completely sure. Regardless, he was welcomed into a tight-knit group of wine connoisseurs, and they called themselves the Angry Men. Was this because they were angry drunks? Or because they had the wine shits often? We will never know.
Do not go in there.
But regardless of the Angry Men origin, Rudy was a vital part of the group. Two of Rudy's closest friends in the group were given the nicknames Mr. Angry and Big Boy Hollywood Jeff. We will call him BBHJ for short. The men would gather 8 times a year, each taking a turn to be the host for the night. One night, one of the men, nicknamed Mr. Angry, spent $225,000 worth on old-ass wine when it came his time to host.
This is what the commoners call fuck you money, said BBHJ as the men cheered and clinked their glasses.
Cheers! Rudy had one of the most advanced palates that any of the other men had ever seen. One of his most impressive talents was being able to identify wines in a blind taste test.
Pink Sutterhelm. Correct. Is that urine? Damn, this guy is good.
As Rudy began buying more and more expensive wine, a documentary was being filmed about these wine-loving men. All was going well, but as we know, wine rhymes with crime. Rudy had begun to start selling extremely rare wines from his personal cellar in auctions and was making a killing. These appeared to be the days for Rudy. He would laugh and laugh as he gathered with the angry men. His life seemed like a dream. That was until Bill Koch himself discovered fakes in his own wine cellar collection. Of course, this obscenely rich asshole had ruined the fun for everyone and hired experts to sort through every single bottle in his expensive bitch boy wine collection. When they discovered that Bill had $4 million worth of fake wine and a portion of it came from Rudy's cellar, it was on. As the FBI started to look into Rudy, they realized that he had some alarming connections. Two of his uncles were con artists that were involved in one of the biggest heists in Jakarta, Indonesia. After the FBI found out that Rudy was on an expired visa, as well as the suspicious wine auctions, they broke into Rudy's $2 million mansion. Instead of opening the door to find bougie furnishings and artwork, the FBI described it as a wine factory. All throughout Rudy's massive mansion, they found countless wine bottles, some soaking to remove the label, while others were laying beside a corking machine. Some bottles had handwritten formulas written in Sharpie on the back of them. There were pages of evidence, notes, and formulas written down in notebooks scattered throughout the home. FBI agents described him as a mad scientist of sorts, with a strong aftertaste. Looking back at clips from the wine documentary that was filmed in the peak of Rudy's success, there were some odd quotes from Rudy. At one point in the film, you can see Rudy taking a sip of wine as he asks, "Can I refill this and put the cork back in?" Followed by his signature laugh. Another moment captured on film was when the crew was trying to get to know the wine collectors better and asked them what they did for a living. When it comes time for Rudy to answer, he looks into the camera and says, "I'm broke. I scam people," with more of his booming laugh. Even though the evidence was right in everyone's face, the majority of the other angry men found it hard to accept that Rudy was a fraud. Even after they read every detail of his case, they continued to praise him and his outstanding taste in wine. Other more relentless men, like Bill Koch, just couldn't let it go, however, and Rudy was charged and sentenced to 10 years in prison. This past April of 2021, Rudy was released from prison. But before he could pop open a fine wine to celebrate, he was deported back to Indonesia. No one else was ever charged as a co-conspirator. However, it was possible that his family helped him with the wine scheme. Ultimately, having a refined palate can come with a ton of responsibilities. Just like chugging an entire box of Franzia wine, I'm sure Rudy had fun in the middle of his crime, but crashed hard once his bank account was left dry. I'd like to picture that Rudy hasn't lost his passion for antique and fine wines, that he is somewhere out there creating something magical for us all to enjoy, and plotting his next big scheme to take down even more rich, snobby assholes. Cheers. All drank to that.
That one's for you, Rudy.
Pour one out for Rudy.
Man, scamming is cool, you know?
I mean, there is a whole entire documentary about this guy called Sour Grapes. Okay. If you haven't watched it, it is a really good one. I think it has like a 90-some review on Rotten Tomatoes or something. But it was a mind-blowing story. And I know in the past, I considered not doing it just because he did end up serving 9 out of the 10 years and then was deported. But I was like, man, that's not really like a small petty crime. He really, really manipulated people to losing a lot of money. But also just the fact that it was something so bougie and something just so obscene that these men would spend that much money on it. And because Bill Koch was screwed over in it, I just felt like, I really liked Rudy, and I really liked I really liked that it was kind of a steal from the rich.
Robin Hood.
Yeah, it was like a Robin Hood situation, but with wine.
Yeah, I get it. I understand that we're petty crimes, but, you know, sometimes we tell stories that aren't crimes. They're just petty.
Yeah.
I know this is a big crime, but his acts were still petty as fuck.
And the fact that those quotes that I read are word for word quotes that he said to these documentary teams. Now, the movie was recorded when he was in the height of his success. No one was even thinking about his wine being fraudulent. But the fact that this guy had the balls to say those exact quotes to the people making this film, and then when they went back to edit the film and found them after he was charged, can you believe?
Can you imagine how badass he must have felt being like, I'm scamming you, to their face? And they're just like, you're a riot, Rudy.
you nut, Rudy. Oh, my God. It was just so in everyone's face. But it's true what I said in that documentary. A lot of his friends still to this day struggle to really look at him as a con artist, because regardless of if he was making these fake wines to sell, he knew wine so well that he made it believable. And in the documentary Sour Grapes, it also showed just how good his palate was and how he could be blindfolded and he would guess every single wine correctly. So regardless of him having these bad intentions, like, the man was still really respected by these wine connoisseurs because he knew it so well.
That is really cool. I was getting really weird Fire Festival vibes from this story. That was a really good documentary about scamming people.
I loved that documentary so much.
Yeah, I would never do a story on that for here just because it's, the story itself is just too good on its own.
But yeah.
The Fire Festival stuff is so interesting.
I know.
My God.
I love stuff like that. So that's why I was like, I want it. I kind of like this whole little like fraud realm, you know, that we can kind of go with. And I know his crimes were a lot of money and he did serve 9 years, but I just thought it was so petty and so freaking funny.
It wasn't the petty crime, but it was petty. Just what he did.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it fits for me.
I love it. I love it. So shout out Rudy.
You know, I also kind of find it really interesting. I mean, I'm obviously not high society when it comes to wines.
Yeah.
My favorite one is a weird concept wine that is peanut butter and jelly flavor.
Yeah.
I am starting to like drier stuff more, mainly because it's lower calorie. But I just think it's so funny when people are like, oh, you've got great taste in wine. Because isn't liking a wine is already an opinion, and then isn't it your opinion that you like someone else's opinion? And it's just like, how is...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's wild to me. I just don't understand, like, what even makes a wine worth $20,000? That's crazy, too.
Dude, can you even believe? Can you freaking... Honestly, look at this wine bottle right in front of us. Can you believe that there is a bottle that is worth 20 grand?
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
And it doesn't have gold in it or like PCP or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just like a really old, old wine.
Like the only way I could see this being legit is if somebody said, oh, this was pulled out of Davy Jones. I don't want to say locker. This was pulled out of his wine cellar, or Elton John had this his whole life and never drank it, something like that.
Yeah, I know. I just can't see myself spending money on old wine. I mean, does it even taste good?
Well, and you probably don't even drink it. Yeah. At that point, it's just a collector's item.
No, yeah. Like, oh, God. And in the documentary, Bill Koch is just such a douche, and he's walking everybody through his cellar. And the fact that he had $4 million worth of fake wine didn't even come close to the entirety of his collection. The dude is just obscenely rich. And the fact that he just couldn't let this go because he was duped, you know, he just couldn't drop it. And I'm like, you are one of the richest people ever. Like, shut up.
Yeah, $4 million is a drop in the bucket for him.
I know. So stupid. But I thought I had to get you your favorite wine.
Well, hey, I'm totally, episode. I love an interactive episode and we haven't had one in a while.
I know.
All right. Well, now that I'm all wind up, I guess it's time for me to tell my story. So this is a story from the news, and it's a crime of passion.
I love those.
I don't feel like I really touched on a crime of passion yet. And
okay, a crime of passion. Those are honestly some of my favorite stories.
And a lot of people are big fans of sex crimes, and it's going to be sexy.
Ooh, can't wait.
So this is a Seriously Sinister SVU over here.
I'm ready.
So get ready for me to get a little nasty on you.
Oh my God. He had too much wine. Everyone run.
This was a bad decision to do with. All right. So brace yourselves, people. we're getting down tonight. No matter how frequent or infrequent, there have been times in our lives where we found ourselves in the mood. And I don't mean for things like breakfast for dinner. I'm talking about hot, sweaty, passionate humps. Perhaps you know it better if I use the adjectives more modern synonyms, like horny, hot to trot, turned on, or my new favorite, applesaucy. Yes, the body and mind can work together in funny ways that cause us to feel some of the oddest sensations. When the hormones are feeling just right, there's no telling what we are capable of. Like a carpenter ant with a deadly fungus injected into his head, we are brainless zombies just looking for something to rub up against. For people who are in relationships, it's much easier to answer the call of the loins. But for those who are single or have not made the right buddy, that call can go on for days. Hour after hour, what starts as a small itch that can't be scratched can build into an emergency of Chernobyl proportions. Sometimes you don't even know it's gotten a hold of you until it's too late. You could be sitting down for breakfast, enjoying a nice bowl of cereal, and finding yourself staring lustfully into the box, thinking, oh yeah, Cap'n Crunch could get it. This is the point of no return. Throughout history, people have achieved the impossible, all in the name of that sweet, soggy release. Inventions have been made, gold medals have been won, and relationships have been ended, mended, broke off again, and started back over, just to satisfy those carnal desires.
Okay, we should probably stay broken up, though.
For me, it led to a lot of stepping out of my comfort zone. Being a very shy person who did not like meeting new people, I would swipe on strangers' pictures, chat with them for a while, and then meet them in person, alone. To some, this probably doesn't seem like a big deal, but it was very difficult for me. Like the quotes about stage fright being something that celebrities never get over, I never stopped being scared when meeting a new date. So what happens to a person when they can't reach that state of satisfaction? When every attempt to find a partner for shaking sheets just ends in shaking hands? As more and more pressure builds, the line between love and crime starts to blur, leaving us with a giant mess on our hands. Our story follows a man by the name of Randy Johnson. Equipped with good looks and a suave-like demeanor, Randy was constantly swimming in female attention. He was a bad boy with a heart of gold, a soft heart, and a rock-hard body. Imagine if a Paco Rabanne commercial took human form, and that you only viewed that person through ecstasy-colored glasses. No matter your religion, orientation, or creed, the mere mention of his name could send you into a tailspin of lust. No one really knew Randy's job. Some have told stories that when walking into coffee shops, female employees would dump the register into a bag and just hand it to him, along with a tall cup of his favorite cold brew. Other rumors stated that he had an OnlyFans account where people would pay top dollar for his fully clothed selfies. Yes, it was the life of luxury for Randy. Women would take him out for lunch, pick up the check, and then thank him. he never really had to put much effort in. When you look as good as him, everything comes easy. This was until one particular late night when Randy got bit by the horny bug. Around midnight on a hot August evening, Randy was feeling more than just the summer heat. He had turned down many women because he had plans to get up early the next morning and take his dog Squirt for a walk. No matter what he tried to do to distract himself, his brain just kept coming back to the same dirty thing.
But
his 6-hour streak of abstinence was just too much for his sex godlike body to handle. "I can't take it anymore," Randy screamed from atop his memory foam love fortress. He quickly grabbed his phone and began to devise the best, most seductive text he could come up with. "You up?" he typed out and sent to the first woman on his contact list. After about 30 seconds of waiting for a reply, he began to get frustrated. Randy was not used to having to wait on others. Normally, he was spending most of his time trying to get them to wait their turn. This was all so new for him. Luckily, as he was a true player about town, he had a Mambo No. 5-esque list of women just waiting by their phones for him. He texted Angela, Pamela, Sandra, and Rita. And as he continued, none of them got back to him. Like an accountant going through a company's entire end-of-year purchases, he worked his way down the list for hours until he came across Taja. At this point, Randy was running out of options. Taja was his last shot before calling it a night. He sent his spicy, "You up?" text, and before he could even put his phone down, he felt a vibration. He quickly lifted the phone back up and read the text from Taja. It read, "Yes!" in all caps, followed by 4 eggplant emojis. He texts back and told her to get her buns over there because he had something he wanted to show her. As it was now 3 a.m., and he knew Taja didn't live very close, he had to find a way to keep his tired mind awake. He cuddled up with Squirt and watched the infomercials on TV. As each second passed, he began to feel his eyelids getting heavy. Even when the infomercial for the kitchen knife that cuts through sheetrock came on, he could not keep his focus. The knife plunged straight through a military-grade tank, just as Randy finally drifted fully to sleep. In what felt like an instant, Randy was quickly jolted awake. The aggressive beeps from his fire alarm and the low roar of flames is all he could hear. He ran out of his bedroom to look down the hallway. The entrance to his home was completely engulfed in flames. He quickly put a shirt on over his completely naked body, removed his window, and jumped out. In complete shock, Randy ran 0.2 miles to his nearest police station, busted in the door, and screamed, "My house is on fire!" The police officers looked at the man, wearing only a shirt and covered completely in soot and ash. He looked like if Porky Pig had started a new job as a chimney sweeper. Randy turned around and ran back down to his burning home. The fire department showed up and saved Squirt from the burning home, but the house was lost. Upon being reunited with his phone, Randy came across several missed calls and texts. These weren't from all of the ladies he texted before. They were from Taja. 8 missed calls, along with texts that read, "You wasted my money to come out here. You smoked. Oh, I see you want to die." And, "I swear to God, I hope you die." Randy looked up in introspection and thought, maybe I should have kept it in my pants. In August of 2019, Taja Russell of Blackwood, New Jersey, received a booty call text. When arriving at the man's Woodbury home, she knocked on the door and made multiple calls. As her arousal and frustration grew, she felt that she needed to teach him a lesson. She drove to the nearest Conoco gas station, bought matches and lighter fluid, and came back to catch his house on fire. Along with all of the video evidence of Taja's wrongdoing, she left plenty of texts as evidence of her intentions. She was arrested with charges of attempted murder, aggravated arson, endangering, and criminal mischief. The unnamed male victim was taken to the hospital and treated for smoke inhalation and first and second degree burns. When interviewed, the victim said he had invited Taja over and that she was a side chick that he had been having a sexual relationship with. In an odd twist, this was the second time that year that a sexual encounter turned to arson in Woodbury, New Jersey. Earlier that year, a 33-year-old woman named Tazia Young had a threesome with her boyfriend and another woman. At one point, the boyfriend asked Tazia to leave so that he could just be alone with the other woman. Tazia went to the same exact Conoco, bought matches and lighter fluid, and caught the man's duplex on fire. The drive for sex can drive people to places unimaginable. It is important to not let these feelings consume us in order to avoid the brink of madness. Chances are, once you feel this sense of climax, you'll forget all of those feelings you had before it. And also, maybe just avoid sexual activity in Woodbury, New Jersey altogether. It seems like that town might be built on some sort of haunted sex burial ground or something. Heed the warning of this story, or you too may find yourself hot and bothered.
Oh my God. So did they ever interview this girl and ask her what made it turn to arson?
I think they said that she had to drive like an hour to get to his house and was just pissed that she drove at like 3 a.m. to get there at 4 and the dude was just asleep and didn't answer the door for her.
Clearly, like, he had to go, right? That was her thought process.
Yeah. I will say in the actual article, I did say it. He was an unnamed male. No idea what this guy looked like. He's probably not a suave man, but I thought it makes the story so much cooler.
Oh my God. How weird. And oh my God, don't even. God, there's so much I want to talk about this one. As soon as you talked about Chernobyl at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, because you and I have just talked about the Chernobyl documentary we both watched on HBO.
That series is so good.
Oh my God. It's so crazy. But then also, just that damn you up text.
You up? I love it.
Did you ever send a you up text in your day, Trevin?
I have never sent a you up text in my life. I am much classier. I have always been. I am a complete sentence maker. I'm always like, pardon me, madam, if you are in the mood, could you come over for a, you know, a nice game of tickle my fancy or something like that?
Oh my God.
And then I usually end it with a, if not, that is totally okay. I will speak with you at a better hour.
I've totally sent a you up text. That's why when you said that you're too classy, I died.
Well,
you are classier than me. It's okay.
Thank you. I just like people to know that you're worth more than two words.
And I didn't want this person to know that.
See, and that's fine. Yeah,
so
I get that.
Okay. Oh my God. Wow. 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 Well, I think you said it best. I think people should just maybe avoid sexual activity in that area.
Yeah, New Jersey seems like a weird place for getting down.
I know. I don't know. I've been upset at people, but I've never had the thought like, yep, I'm going to burn their house down.
Yeah, I can't think of a time where I've been, especially when it comes to like a sexual encounter or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's never even crossed my mind, so.
I had a girl one time meet me on Tinder, and we met up at Up Down, or it's an arcade bar in our city. And she was giving me all the good signs and whatnot, and she was like, oh, I live far away.
Is she British?
She's British for some reason in this story. And she was like, oh, I need a place to stay. We're just gonna continue with that.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, sure. Everything seems to be going that way. And she came over to my house and, you know, we had a couple kisses on the cheek. And then nothing happened. She just went to bed. And she just didn't want to drive all the way back to her place.
Oh, my God.
I wasn't, you know, as the Flight of the Conchords say, a kiss is not a contract. So I wasn't really frustrated or anything, but I thought...
didn't want to set her on fire.
I didn't want to set her on fire, but she could have just said, cool. I'm looking for a place to stay.
Like, literally, I need to sleep on a mattress. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I would have had her fill out my Airbnb contract first if I knew it was going to go that direction, but I wasn't mad about it.
Did you make her breakfast in the morning?
You know, I honestly don't remember how the morning went. I think she was just like quick to get going.
She's like, anyway, great sleep.
Yeah, I don't know what that says about me, if that means I totally struck out. Like, oh, Trevin, you don't get it. You just sucked. But I think she really was just tired.
I think you're all right, you know? I think you're okay.
Not that I really care now, but it's something that I find funny.
Oh, my God. Oh, see, I never dealt with Tinder. I missed that stage. That's why I'm that friend that gets on other people's Tinders. But
it's so weird now. Even, like, I've been out of the dating game for, like, 3.5 years, I think, and Tinder and everything's way different than it was even back when I did.
I'm sure.
It was like if you used Facebook back when it was thefacebook.com, and then you came back to it now and you're just like, politics? Advertisements? What is this?
Weird.
Back when it used to just be who's hot in college.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, things evolve.
Times are changing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, that was quite the sexy story that escalated quite quickly.
Yes, the only way Seriously Sinister could bring you a sexy crime.
Love it. Love
sex crime.
Wow. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Go out and grab your bottle of Windy Wine Company. And I hope that you all have a great week and can toast along with us while listening. If you're driving or at work, obviously don't do that.
Yeah, we could get in trouble for suggesting
that. Oh, but just keep in mind, everyone, that no matter the crime, big or small, in the end, we're all doomed.
Doomed.
Bye.
See ya.
Annie, what in the world are you most afraid of?
Demons, disembodied voices, and my mother. Will, what in the world are you most afraid of?
Witches, poltergeists, and scripted podcast trailers. Come with us each week as we face our fears and bring you a terrifying, bizarre, and hilarious tale from the paranormal narrated by two middle-aged humans who drag each other.
Almost from the moment of Leshes' death, St. Mary's, Heffron Hall, named after the bishop whom Leshes had tried to kill, reportedly became a hotbed of paranormal activity. It began with phantom footsteps, heard roaming the third floor, accompanied by the sound of a tapping cane.
Liza Minnelli was nerding a show in the asylum.
Hey, it's Liza.
Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard.
Oh, you cretin. This is giving me the absolute fears.
Maybe you're the cretin, Annie Gann, and I'll be coming for you.
Cannibals, like, imagine eating somebody else.
Yeah, I wouldn't go near you for eating. You'd be awful stringy.
You'd be like, they cook you and everyone would be like, oh, this meat's gone off, isn't it?
So if you enjoy a little weirdness and just the occasional catfight, we might have just the show for you.
You can listen to Mysteries of the Unexplained on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Mysteries of the Unexplained and come join the dark side.
Join our Facebook and Instagram at Mysteries of the Unexplained.
Also, we want your spooky stories. Send them to motustories@gmail.com and get them read out on the show.
Also, we'll sing Celine Dion.
Thank you for listening to Seriously Sinister.
If you have a true petty crime story to share, please email us at seriouslysinisterpodcast@gmail.com or send us a Facebook message.
If you would like to support our show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.
Also, tell your friends about this podcast.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at @seriouslysinisterpodcast.
And on Twitter at @seriouslysinpod.
Shout out to Trevin for writing all of the original music you hear and for producing our show. Follow him and his music at Fiesta Maiden on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Facebook.
And credit to Miranda Lucas for our awesome logo. You can find her on Instagram at MirandaLucas26.
All stories are written by myself and Trevin, and all stories are based on actual, true petty crimes.